Welcome to the Investing in Real Estate podcast with Clayton Morris. This is the show where we focus on buy and hold real estate. Why do we do it? We do it for the purposes of creating passive income and legacy wealth for you and your family. If you're interested in finding your freedom number, come over to our website at morrisinvest.com/freedom and download your free financial freedom cheat sheet today. All right, everyone, welcome into today's episode of the Investing in Real Estate podcast. Today, we're talking all about property management, the ins and outs, the do's and don'ts, everything you wanted to find out about property management. We're going to get our hands dirty today and dive in. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
Go ahead, tell us.
Oh, I was just going to say, this is a live stream, but you may be listening to the podcast version, in which case you're listening to a live episode, studio audience.
That's right. So it's beautiful outside, so we decided to do this outside. And
and we have no studio audience.
We have no studio. Well, we do have kids that are going to be running around. So thank you so much for downloading and subscribing to the show. And we're going to get into the nitty-gritty today. We've got a ton of questions we're going to get through on property management. Obviously, it's one of the most important parts of the process for real estate investing. If you're new to real estate investing and what we do at Morris Invest, we buy homes, we renovate them, we place tenants in those properties, and we try to have a seamless process from beginning to end. Now, it's real estate investing.
Right.
So you're dealing with human beings.
Yes.
And you can never put real estate investing in a box, like a simple little box, right? There's always going to be variables. There's always going to be issues, and things are going to pop up from time to time. After all, it's a human being business, right? Everything from the tenants to the contractors to the property management team.
The person selling it, the person buying it, right? These are people making decisions on a very personal level. You're actually the least personal part of the whole thing because ideally, as an investor, this is just something that you own and collect rent on. It's not something that you pick out paint colors and, you know, fall in love with. And, you know, you want to have a good relationship with the people that live there. But it's not your home to live in. It's your investment to own.
Right. And very often it's going to be a hands-off process. So I'll visit some of my properties sometime when I'm in town with my team. And I've had renters of my properties come outside because I was actually looking at renovating the house next door. And I had one of our renters come out and she said,
"Hi. What are you doing here?"
No, she didn't.
Okay.
She said, "Hi, can I help you?" Because I was sort of in the front yard almost, and she was like looking out for her property, and she said, "Can I help you?" And I said, "Oh, no, I'm just looking at the house next door. I'm looking at renovating the house next door." She said, "Oh, okay, great. Have a great day." She said, "Yeah, that house would be great if you could renovate that. It would improve the whole street." I said, "Great. Nice to see you." And I didn't say anything about myself being the owner of the property that she was walking out of. So you really, it's not a good idea to really dive deep into that relationship with tenants.
I guess, yeah,
I mean, if
as
you're
a
managing,
general rule of thumb.
I mean, if you're managing the property yourself,
right.
Of course, then you'll have those relationships. But if you're hands off, let that in the hands of the property management team.
I mean, that's just our preference about the whole thing. And I have my real estate license. And, you know, I once represented a client who was trying to sell his house and it was a triplex. Is that what you said?
Triplex. Yeah.
A triplet. And his family was living in the other units. He wanted to sell it and he didn't charge them any rent. So obviously that's the worst case scenario, right?
Right.
Is that like you're not making any money. They walk all over you and you can't like he didn't have the heart to say like maybe you should pay me some rent or maybe you should kick in for the property taxes. So he was like, well, I'm just going to sell since I'm, you know, paying for everyone to live here. It was really heartbreaking. So, you know, that was on the other end of the spectrum, too personal. Obviously, we don't want to be so impersonal that we don't make decisions that are in the best interest of the people who live there. So, you know, you want to be empathetic and heartfelt, but not overly emotionally attached.
Right. And that's why you're doing, you know, a good renovation on your property and you're giving your tenants a great place to live. But you want to, if you're using a property management team, which is what we're talking about today, you want to let them do their job. So we're going to dive into how do you look for a good property management team? What are some of the key things and takeaways you want to find when you're talking to them? And again, it's hands-off process. So they're going to be fielding phone calls when there's a toilet that backs up or there's a sewer line problem or there's a storm and there's branches on the roof, right? you're not going to field those phone calls. So it's important that they have the personal relationship with the tenants. And those are the property management teams that we work with. They have a personal relationship with the tenants, and they've developed that sort of one-on-one, face-to-face. And that's always so important in any business, I think.
Right. Yeah, exactly. But there are some sort of baseline things that you should expect, right? You should expect a monthly statement, whether that comes to you in the mail or in your email, whatever. You ask them what they prefer. In that monthly statement, you should be able to read it pretty clearly, like, what did the tenant pay? What did they take out of that? And what do you get in your own bank account? That should be easy to read. There should be itemized lists of things that they either did or charged you for. Like maybe they visited the tenant and they had to put in a new toilet. Then, you know, you the cost of the toilet, maybe the cost of the plumber, those things should be really, really clear. They shouldn't just kind of say, well, this, you know, and, you know, best case scenario, you get really documented records of that.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
It's starting to rain on us.
Yeah, that's fine. A little rain never hurt anybody. This is live and we're outside. So
right.
I needed a shower anyway.
Well, we'll just.
So, yes, we with the property management statement, obviously they're going to show you like what Natalie talked about on that statement. One of the questions we had was about what is a typical amount that should be taken out for property management? What should they charge you? Now, this can be a different range depending on where you are in the country and how busy they are. We have a small town in Pennsylvania where it's in Nesquehoning, Pennsylvania, where we own a property.
They just raised our rates.
The property management team.
It was so cheap.
It was before. 6%?
I want to say it was 8% or $75, whichever one is higher. And they just raised it by $25, which we got a 6 months notice that we intend to do this. And if you'd like to change property managers, let us know. But this will be the new rate. Please confirm. And, you know, I have no problem with them making money because I want them to stay in business because when that toilet does break, I don't want to drive 2 hours to Nesquehoning, Pennsylvania. I want him to be there to take care of that. So,
right. So 8%, and then they raised it. I don't know if it went to 9% or 10%, but 10% is pretty standard.
Yeah.
I once spoke to an accountant on the phone who was literally had no idea what he was talking about. And he said, 10% for property manager, that's really high. And I said, actually, no, that's pretty much the standard.
Right.
12% can be in some places like California.
Chicago, I've heard. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 15% even.
So 10%. And it's a pretty thankless job. Okay, at the end of the day, property management teams aren't swimming in cash like doctors, you know, like Scrooge McDuck swimming through coins. You know, if you think about a $700 property, a $700 a month property, then when you have that property, that's $70 a month for that one property.
Yeah.
And that's not incredibly lucrative,
right?
Because they're also having to advertise the property, go out and get cash flow, take care of the property, drive by, do site visits, manage crews. So it is not a terribly lucrative business, but nevertheless, 10% is a pretty average number for property
management.
And the
way I think of it is that most months, they won't have to do much. But when you need them, you want it there. I mean, that's kind of like paying your insurance premium, right?
Right.
Most of the time, you don't need that insurance company. But when you need them, you want them to do an excellent job. So I feel very comfortable paying into a business like this that I have high expectations of. Now, I think Timothy here in the chat said, how do you vet these property managers? You want to ask them, first of all, how do they communicate? Some of them text you and some of them don't like that. If they're sort of a bigger operation, they've got people and they're going to say, you're going to talk to so-and-so in the office and direct all inquiries there. And then, you know, how do you talk to so-and-so? But if it's just like one dude, you know, who does it all himself.
Like our guy in Pennsylvania.
Right. Here's one thing that I learned in real estate school. They have to be licensed, a licensed real estate agent.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to be a broker, but they have to have a real estate license because in order to collect money for real estate on behalf of somebody else, you have to be licensed. I think there are probably quite a few property managers out there who are not.
I bet. I mean, the property management teams that we work with are licensed brokers.
So ask for their license because otherwise it's illegal for them to collect your rent on your behalf.
Right. So some of the other ways that you vet a property management company, because that was one of the questions we got, what do you look for in a team and what qualifications should they have? So most, you know, if they're a property management company and they've managed a lot of properties, chances are they're going to be a broker, they're going to be a licensee. So that's probably going to be a part of the process.
Another, but not in these smaller towns, you know, like I think it's maybe smaller towns, smaller shops or smaller, even like the person who works in the office at the, like if you have a big condo, you know, a big association, and the person who runs the HOA, that person has to be a licensee as well. So it doesn't hurt to ask.
So what other things do you look for when you want to vet a property management company? You do want to find out how they communicate, because some will, as Natalie said, text you. Some will send email, snail mail, to let you know updates on your property. Some are a combination of those things. Some use email, right? So there are certain people in the offices that will handle certain things. So, for instance, if you get a health department violation letter in the mail, what does that look like? Who does that go to? So in our Indiana property management office, there's a person designated that handles that. She receives those violation letters, whether it's high grass or those other things, branches on the roof, rubbish in the yard, and then those can get funneled to a maintenance team. Some other towns don't even have health departments to worry about, and therefore there's not a person in the office designated for that. How do they background check their tenants? This is important. So this is one thing that's important in all of our property management companies that we work with. What sort of background checks do they do on the tenant? Well, you want to find out if they have employment, right, or they're able to pay their rent, so employment verification. Criminal background, so they want to look at their criminal background, and that's something that's standard. They also want to verify with previous landlords that they pay on time. So the property management teams that we work with will check with previous landlords when they can to find out if they pay on time, and their rental history to see if they have any evictions in their records and that sort of stuff. So that's a good rule of thumb for how to vet and look at property management teams.
Did you say credit?
Check their credit as well. You know, another thing that I find really important is I want to ask the – very often when you're vetting in whatever town you're in across the country – you'll find that property management companies that talk about their software first, I had this experience where they'll want to talk about the software that they use, like the web, you know, the web interface, so you can kind of log in and see your rental history, that sort of stuff. They're very proud of the $60,000 that they spent on their software. But then when you ask them the question, how long is your property vacant, or what is your vacancy rate, then they have a difficult time answering that. We had a client that we took on. He had a property in Florida, and he was with a property management company. His property sat vacant for 6 months, which for us is, you know, that's unheard of. If that ever happens, that's a mistake in the system. But 6 months vacancy rate, he said, well, they kind of wooed me because they had some bells and whistles in their software and all this stuff.
Well, I mean,
which is nice.
I really like that. Great
well, I know
software.
You like software, but here's the thing. But here's my point on that.
I understand what you're saying, but
they didn't have is people going out advertising and collecting rent on properties, focusing on cash flow. They were focused on the software instead of the cash flow.
Yes, I understand what you're saying. I mean, you want to ask them like, what's their average vacancy? They know this kind of thing. If they're, you know, keeping their books, they know that they don't have that. Their average vacancy is just a few weeks, less than a month. Right. That's usually pretty good. More than 2 months, you're kind of like, what's going on here, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just something to consider.
You want to ask them, like, because if they use a good software, then we just got a question in the chat about accounting. And if they use a really, you know, some of these great software, it will show you what you made this month, rent and expenses and, you know, management fees. And then it'll show you that per year as well. So then you don't have to keep track of like, okay, I spent $60 on a toilet and then $100 for this plumber visit. And then I, you know, like you've got it all and you can hand that to your accountant at the end of the year, come tax time, and say for 123 Main Street, here is everything that was spent. Now that doesn't mean you don't have to then, you know, keep track of other expenses into your business, right? But just for each property, then you can see all of that. And if they've got a portal where you can log in and see that and download your statements month to month and keep them there, I'm all for that. I like that.
Right. And there are different – I've learned a lot about this different software, because when you talk to a lot of different property management companies that I have, you're going to find that there's just variance on these software programs, some of which cost like $60,000. I talked to one company that bought it And then they just, it just was such a waste of money. And so they tried to get their money back for it. And they actually hired like two additional people in the office. This was in Michigan. So yes, that's important. We have one property management company that we work with in Pennsylvania that mails us a statement every month with our rent check as a check in the mail.
And it's actually handwritten.
It's handwritten. But you know what? Again, I don't care because the property cash flows. It doesn't have all the bells and whistles of software. We get a monthly statement that we that I give to you that goes in our records. We get the check. We get the phone out and do the digital deposit for our bank.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. And they don't have, they're not spending $50,000 on software in order to, you know.
But maybe they will. That's the place that just increased our premiums. Maybe they're like, we need to charge a little more so that we don't have to handwrite these checks.
Or maybe they're going to hire somebody else in the field to go out and show properties to tenants. So I guess that's the trade-off.
It's extremely tedious to keep track of all of this stuff. Like they have to go to Home Depot and buy the toilet and keep track of that receipt and then later put that on your... So if they've got a program that does that for them, that's amazing. That's great because otherwise you don't know if you're like, did you pay for the right toilet or the, you know, you don't know. And so, it's great that the more organized, the better.
Right.
Clearly.
So we had a question in the chat. I don't know if you saw it from Derek. Did you catch that one?
I saw the question. I did not read it.
And then we had somebody else say, great question, but we both missed it because we were talking.
Ask the question again.
Yeah, Derek, please ask that question again. We'll get to
it. How did you say it was a great question if you didn't?
Well, no, I saw somebody else say.
Someone else said great
question.
That's not your editorial.
Welcome to the live edition of the Investing in Real Estate show.
We're thinking on our feet.
Exactly. So thanks to all of you, by the way, for joining us today. It's been great. And if you're new to it, you can please go to our YouTube channel and take care of it. So is it common practice for the property management company to keep the security deposits? Yes, it's totally common practice. Thank you, Derek, for re-asking that question. Here's why. And she can get more into the legal tax implications of that. But you do not want to be handling people's direct security deposits. In fact, we had one company that in North Carolina that wanted us to handle the security deposit, right? And you said, why? I don't want to handle that. Explain why you don't want to have the security deposit.
Well, I don't know if this is, if this applies to all states, but I'm licensed here in New Jersey. And in New Jersey, you're not allowed to put that money in an interest-bearing account. You're not allowed to earn interest on a security deposit. I'm not exactly sure why. That's just the rule. And so then you have to find a place to hold that that you don't earn interest on. I guess you could keep it in your checking account because you don't earn interest on a checking account. But most savings accounts have some kind of small interest.
And some, and a lot of checking accounts now have small interest.
Right.
Too.
And so that's just like, I don't need that hassle. And I don't have otherwise an escrow account, like a formal escrow account. So I just don't want to deal with that. And then when they go and also then when they go and return that security deposit, they know what they're taking out of that. I don't want to be involved in that accounting. So they should hold that. They have access to a formal escrow account. I don't want anything to do with that. I've done that before. And then especially when I was just like taking rent in my own name, I only had one condo in San Francisco. They'd send the security deposit. I'd put it in my savings account, which again was a mistake because I did earn interest on it. And then later I had to remember like this money's not mine. Just don't move it around. Don't save it. You know, then that's just, I don't want to deal with that.
Right. So good question. Thank you, Derek, for that. What should you pay monthly and are there other fees? Now, we talked about the 10% a month out of your monthly rent. So a lot of people will ask the question, oh, am I going to pay them up front for, you know, am I going to pay them up front for the fee? That meaning if the property's vacant, are you paying them the 10% fee? And of course not. The answer is no. They're only going to take 10% out once the property is rented.
I think I've heard of people doing that. You shouldn't do it.
Really? It's,
yeah.
That's awful.
That they charge you even.
What's the incentive for them to get it rented if there's no, you know what I mean? They make money when they get the property rented, so it's on them to get it rented as quickly as possible. They don't want a property sitting there vacant. So that's ridiculous. If a property management company is charging you for management and the property's not rented, then you should ask for your money back. That's ridiculous. So 10% a month, and then you want to make sure that 10% a month, that's coming out of your monthly rent every month. Mm-hmm. Now, very often, another fee would be a lease up fee. And that's different depending on what property management company you work with, what state you're in. For instance, in Indiana, we have a lease up fee at our property management company. I think it's $150 lease up fee, and that's it. There are no other fees. Mm-hmm. And then in Michigan, I think some of them will take first month's rent.
I've heard some investors say they don't like property managers doing this because they think that it gives them an incentive to turn over the property. I don't necessarily agree with that because it costs a lot of money to advertise a property, and it also costs time to vet tenants, and it costs time to create a lease and get that lease signed and have them come in the office and sign the lease. And so I'm actually okay with that. And like I said, I know other investors feel differently. If it's a high lease up fee, like, you know, hundreds of dollars, maybe I can see how a property manager might do that. But if you're keep that in mind, like, oh, this person, if you have a multifamily and they keep turning over the tenants and you're paying this lease up fee a lot, then you're like, I don't like this. Then maybe you can interview some other properties. But if you pay this once every 2 or 3 years, that doesn't bother me. So take it on a case by case basis.
Well, and the property management companies we work with have it written so that if, for instance, they rent the property up and you pay them first month's rent and the tenant moves out 3 months later, that's on them. And they're not going to charge you that first month's rent to get a new tenant in the property. Usually they have a 12-month rule, so the term of the lease. That's very, very common. They'll be like, oh, that was us. We got a bad apple. You know. And you're going to have bad apples. I mean, if you own 30 properties, you're going to have an eviction. We've had evictions. You're going to have them from time to time. I mean, it just happens, right? Mm-hmm. It's part of the process. You can vet them, but people can have hardships in their family. People, you know, can lose their jobs. People can have a death in their family. People can have to move suddenly. A boyfriend, you know, has an issue and they've got to move across the country. I mean, it happens, you know.
Yeah.
They get transferred for military purposes or otherwise. And so not that that's an eviction, but you're going to have people that are going to have to leave sometimes pretty quickly. And if that happens, the property management company will then fill up the property again and they'll waive that fee. They'll typically waive a lease up fee and they'll also waive that first and last month's rent fee. And that's not going to come out of your rent the next time. So I know that a lot of the property management companies we work with
contract.
Right.
Look at your contract with your property manager. Now, someone in the chat keeps asking if they offer bookkeeping, and not really. Like I said, you'll get a bookkeeping on your statement, and you can use your statement for your own bookkeeping purposes, but they're not going to give you a $500 rent check and say, okay, now let's set aside $100 right. for taxes. And you
know, that's why you hire a bookkeeper.
Right.
Talk about that. We hired a bookkeeper and they're very cheap. A friend of ours had encouraged us to hire a bookkeeper and we kept putting it off because Natalie was like, I can do it. And she's great at bookkeeping, but she's also not, because there are so many things that a bookkeeper can do.
It starts to get really complicated after you've got, you know, we have now so many. And then, you know, our turnkey business now has its own expenses that we don't take expenses out of that for our own management of our own personal portfolio. So it was just too much. And, you know, what they're doing now, they pay our contractors, they pay and they go through our credit cards and they mark all expenses and they categorize the expenses properly. And that was something that I was getting confused about because, you know, what now is a business expense for our turnkey company and what is a business expense for our own portfolio? So they just do all that. They know how to code properly. It's, you know, it's awesome.
And a bookkeeper is a write-off.
Right.
And it's cheap. I mean, a bookkeeper is not expensive, right?
It's a couple $100.
Like, a month?
Yeah. It's really not that much.
Yeah.
So in comparison to what it was taking me to learn these new skills and not do them properly. And then, you know, I had all these spreadsheets and I gave them to our tax guy this year. And he was like, I'm not going through, like, this is not the formal way. And so he was like, I'll wait until your bookkeeper gives me her information. So it was like, I was spinning my wheels. I'm just not trained for that. You know, you got to leave it to the pros.
How do you get on the same page about important issues? That was another question we got. How do you get on the same page about important issues with a property management company? Look, like I said at the very beginning of this video or this episode, this is a people business, and there are so many variables when it comes to this business, and things pop up all the time. For instance, at one of our properties recently, we had a water main that broke. Well, that was on the city to take care of. Well, the problem is the tenants couldn't get water while the city was taking care of it. So what did the property management team do? Well, in this situation, our property management team in Indiana was fantastic. They put the tenants in a hotel on their dime and ate the cost. Now, you're not going to find property management companies that are going to do that all the time. So you need to be on the same page. Find out from the property management team, okay, a water main broke. They can't get water. What do we do?
Yeah.
And you might have to get some sort of stipend from the city. The city may have to rectify that or cover the cost of the hotel. That may be something that you may even need to get involved with. But other times, I don't want phone calls about little petty stuff. So at most of the time, the little costs, the fixing of a toilet, the replacement of a door handle that got jimmied or broken, that's going to be something that the property management company will fix and probably not call you. You may see it on your monthly statement, in which case it may then be taken out of their security deposit and charged to the tenant. So those are things at the beginning you can have discussions with your property management company about.
But also, you might also want to keep in mind that if your tenant has renter's insurance, the renter's insurance would have paid for the displacement of that tenant. So the insurance company would, there's a line item on their insurance policy that says, if you can't live here for some reason, for a temporary reason, we will pay the expenses of wherever else you need to pay. Now, obviously, you can't require that your tenants have renter's insurance, but if you get a really awesome tenant and they have that, that'd be great. And also Section 8 tenants, they will be covered under that as well. So that wouldn't have fallen to the tenant or the owner or the property manager at all. So there are some circumstances that, you know, you don't have to deal with that.
Another thing is on insurance for you as the owner of the property. We've been getting lately, we got an umbrella insurance policy, but we also have insurance policies on our individual properties. Mm-hmm. One of the things that you can get, it's not required, and it's totally up to you if you want to add that expense in, is rent coverage in the case of a vacancy or an eviction. Let's say you've got, for some reason, a 3-month vacancy on your property, and or this water main breaks, and now you're obviously not collecting rent from this tenant because they can't even get water and they're staying at a hotel, so you're not going to be collecting rent from them.
Right.
So what do? Now you're out 3 months rent. Well, you can, under insurance policies, get rent retribution, meaning that mm-hmm. they'll cover you and pay your rent for you. Basically, the insurance policy will. You just have to file a claim with your insurance policy and they'll take care of it.
But that is a claim. And once you do that, they can raise your policy, your premium. So you
want to
think
that,
about it, if that's worth it to you. It's hard to say. And
I mean, if you got a tree,
insurance agent.
I mean, if a tornado knocks your house down, that's
you're
when you probably want to file that claim.
Right. Yeah, but if it's like a month and a half, that might be something that you kind of eat. And, you know, in your accounting, we've talked about this several times, you're accounting for vacancy rate of at least a few months.
Right.
So hopefully you can afford that.
Another question here, how often should you communicate with your property management team? How often should you communicate with your property management team?
If you think about it in the future, like you got a tenant in there, they're on a 2, 3, 4, 5 year lease, and they pay rent all the time, I never want to hear from them. I want to get that statement in the mail, and that's it. But then, you know, I also don't like it when sometimes I get a notice, and it's like, oh, you know, this property has a new lease. And I'm like, what happened to the old tenant? How come I didn't know that? I want to know those things. When that person left, why? Is everything okay? So you should only really hear from them either if an issue arises, and hopefully they've taken care of it in a quick and prudent way. And then when it's time to either lease up that tenant or get a new one. You know, one thing I don't love it when, because your leases are either a year or two and your insurance company wants to see a copy of that lease. And I don't like having to chase down the leases. When a new lease comes in, my property manager should tell me that. And I've almost never had, only once, the management company in San Francisco. They always sent me the new leases. But most of the time they just do it and they don't tell you. And I wish that was better.
Yeah, leases, I mean, you know, and every property management company is going to have their different system for leases. And, you know, sometimes they think that people don't need them. I don't know. Some people don't even get insurance on their property. So a lot of people don't have systems in place where they just send the lease out.
You need them. You need to have that. I mean, it's illegal for the tenant not to be able to contact you, the owner. On your lease, it has to say, who owns this property and what is their physical address and phone number, because they need to be able to contact you. Like the property management company, they can take off to Mozambique and never come back, right? They don't own that property, so they don't have a legal obligation to take care of this tenant, but you do. So the law states that on your lease, it has to say the name and address of the owner. So then you want to know who's got your name and address, who lives in your property, what is their phone number?
And what are the terms? You know,
what are the terms?
Is it a year,
right? Like
2 years?
Those are the kinds of things that I don't know how you could justify not giving that to the owner. But a lot of times they just kind of get swamped and you have to go looking for it. So set your calendar alerts like, hey, did so-and-so up their lease? Can I please see it? Because I need to renew insurance as well.
And then usually they'll get a copy of it. Sometimes it'll take like 24, 48 hours and they'll, you know, send it out to you. Sometimes, and they usually keep them under lock and key. Leases aren't just laying out on people's desks. So allow them a little bit of time to get you a copy of that. Sometimes it requires them to get it from somebody who keeps it under lock and key, scans it, sends it over to you under the
law. They've got it in a, like,
they do.
In a Dropbox.
No,
like,
they're not allowed to. A lot of times they're not allowed to keep digital copies of it. They have to keep it on file. Depending on the state, you'll find that each state has different laws about how they can keep privacy records. And so that's private information. They can't just keep it on a Dropbox, sometimes on a server. They have to keep it in a filing cabinet, and it needs to be scanned and then emailed or sent electronically to the person that's requesting it. So just allow them some time. Every state has different laws with regards to leases. But to answer that question, I don't want to be communicated with very much at all, just for major items. You know, a tree fell through my roof. There's a sidewalk that needed replacing in Michigan. There was on one of our properties. Remember the city? There was an assessment that needed to be done. And so the property management team came to us and said, the city of Warren, Michigan is requesting that you replace the sidewalk. And this is what it's going to cost, $1,200 or something.
Right.
You know, you want to know about that stuff. But most of the time we're busy. We want to spend time with our families. We're creating passive income. I don't want to be called regularly and sent emails nonstop about my property.
And maybe you can set a threshold as well and say, don't call me for anything under $200. Just fix it.
Right.
But if it's going to be more than that, then call me and let me know. Because then maybe you have some choices in the matter. Maybe you can say, for instance, we had a property management team and they had a Section 8 inspection from the city and they said, okay, the city wants this punch list. It was like a one-page document of all these things. Fix this handrail, you know, tighten this screw, whatever. And they said, we're going to have our contractors do it for $7,000. We were like, what? I don't think so. And so we had our own contractor do it and it was
Like a
small fraction of what. So I don't know what they were trying to pull with that. And so thankfully, I mean, originally they're just like, here's the bill, send it to us. And I was like, I'm going to.
Well, because a lot of times, here's the secret. Property management companies don't make much money. And the thing is, property management companies don't, they don't make much money. And so that they, by servicing out their own sort of maintenance team, they can make a little of extra money, right? Because they're called.
Maybe. I don't know what the deal with that was. They weren't. Yeah. I don't know. And I was like, nope, I don't approve that charge.
And we took care of it.
And so we took care of it. So you know, there's certain things you want to. I mean, obviously, I'm not going to choose like the cheapest washer and dryer,
right?
That's going to break on me, and you know, is like off market that you get in. I don't know, off the black market or whatever, right? Like, but I don't want to pick out washers and dryers. I just want like a general budget. So
You said there was a question.
The question there was about inspections. Do property managers do inspections on a regular basis? And most of our property managers do give us a yearly report.
Mm-hmm. They have to, because they'll go out and change air filters.
Right.
So they'll go out, and a lot of our property management teams that we work with our crews, our maintenance crews and our repair crews. So if after a storm there's branches on the roof, you know, there's gutters down because of a big snowstorm or a rainstorm, they'll notify and they'll work to remedy that as quickly as they can. Or if there's rubbish in the yard, you know, kids after a basketball game walking home through a bag of McDonald's food in the yard and the city wants to fine you for it, they'll take care of it. So But yearly, they'll do air filter switches out on the on the furnaces, and so they're going to go and check on the property.
Smoke detectors, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And you want them to do it because a lot of times your insurance company is going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to come out and say, "We don't want to insure this property that's missing a handrail to the steps, so get that fixed." Well, even better if the property management team has already done that. And they should, it's their business in their city. They need to know what is code. Like, are the banister rails too close together? Well, then they need to know that. They should know this is their city. It's their business. I expect that. That's what I'm paying for.
Somebody asked about other fees, and it depends on the city that you're in, but sometimes there's a landlord fee associated with being a landlord. And I know, like, in Michigan, there's, like, I think, like $125 fee to be a landlord from the city. And now that's something that will have, basically, the property management team will send you the application typically to fill that out and get that on file with the city. But it is ultimately your responsibility, not the property manager's responsibility.
Yeah.
But then in a lot of states, there is no landlord fee. It's just another way for the bureaucracies to make money. You know what?
But that's not a fee that the property manager,
right.
A lot of times if there's a fee, like a tax assessment or something, the property management will say, "We got this. We're going to add it to your bill and pay it for you." For instance, in one of our properties in Reading, Pennsylvania, the utility bills are sent to us, the mm-hmm. property manager, the owner, for some reason, which bugs me. But our property manager has some way that he gets all bills from the city, even though it's mailed to me. So a lot of times I'll get it and I'll say, "Hey, this, you know, here's the water bill." He's like, "I already saw it," because he filters through all that stuff and he pays it and he adds it to the tenant's rent.
But we get it. We just get a copy of it.
I usually see it and I'm like, okay, great. I do look at it because for some reason we had this tenant who was exorbitant water charges. Like,
was it $800 a month in water?
Crazy. And they're like, "Well, they have kids." I'm like, "I have kids too."
What are they doing? Creating a pool in the living room?
Right. It was so weird. And I use cloth diapers, so I'm washing my diapers.
Right.
And I don't have that kind of water fee. And they're like, "Well, I think, you know, the sprinklers were broken and they let it go or something." He's like, "I've been on this renter for this." So I did look at it, but I don't anymore. I just sort of look at it, and I know that he takes care of it. I don't send it to him all the time. So probably if you think they haven't seen this bill, then send it to them. I just prefer for them to pay most things and then take it out of my rent.
And finally, we will wrap up with this question, unless there's any other questions. The importance of property management and how it makes your experience passive. That's the ultimate reason you use a property management company. You know, at Morris Invest, what we do when we work with a client for the first time, one of the questions we'll ask is, you know, what is your freedom number? And we have a free download. If you haven't downloaded it, it's just go to our website, morrisinvest.com/freedom. You can download it. It's 3 pages, and it'll kind of teach you your monthly expenses, how many rental properties it'll take for you to cover those expenses. But it's all about passive income. And someone asked earlier, in that formula, do you put in the property management fee in that 40% that you take out for vacancy, repairs, and expenses? And yes, we build in the property management fee into that formula. So passive income, you're at the beginning of this process, you're realizing that I want to build passive income. So that number, the return on investment that you're making on a property, if it's 12% or it's 10% or 11% ROI, return on investment, that 10% for the property management company is built into that. So, you know, that way you make sure that you've got, like, that information inside of the property management, inside of that formula. So you're covered on passive income. That all those numbers are built into that. Right?
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Are you asking me a question?
Well, I was just saying, on the if you're building passive income, people are like, "Well, oh, so I'm going to be making this amount, but then, oh, I've got to pay the property management company on top of that. So does that cut into my ROI?" Not if you're front loading it and figuring it out, you know?
Right.
So anyway.
Yeah. I mean, it's just that unless you're the kind of person who can really, like, assemble every type of IKEA furniture and knows how to fix plumbing and electricity and do drywall and all of this stuff, like, this is just not something you should be doing yourself. You're investing in real estate in order to build your portfolio. But if you think that you have time then to service several, you know, units or homes. That's one thing, but probably you don't, and you can't do it well. And even I didn't have a property manager in my home in San Francisco, and I lived in New York City. So when something happened, like, I would call Roto-Rooter for the lady that lived there, and that was crazy. That's dumb, right? I shouldn't have to do that, because then I'd be like, okay, she has a clogged toilet. Can you come here at 5 o'clock on Tuesday? Okay, great. Now I'd have to call her back. Can you be there and let them in at 5 o'clock on Tuesday? Or even had like, so-and-so is going to fix this thing on Wednesday.
Sounds miserable.
And then they were like, well, I don't want them there without me, and I can't be there on Wednesday. Okay, I'll call back. And oh. You know, it was just like, that was not a good use of my time. I should have had a property manager on that. Even once I had my brother-in-law go and replace the garbage disposal, and I got him $100 gift certificate to Ruth Chris. That's how I should have paid nice. Him, because he's actually a very good property manager.
Contractor.
Well, now he manages their own properties.
Yeah.
Because he's an amazing contractor. That's the kind of guy who should be doing this, not me.
Right.
So I should have just paid him a monthly fee to do that kind of stupid crap. But I didn't, because I didn't know any better. And because, you know, investing in it, this is a topic for another show, but because I was investing in such an expensive market, I was losing money on that anyway, so I really couldn't afford it. I could barely afford the $100 to Ruth Chris for
right.
him. So,
and that brings up the point about the difference between A, B, and C neighborhoods. This property that she was talking about was in an A neighborhood with an A-class tenant, and they are the worst. And so we've got whole podcasts, whole videos here on the channel
right.
all about why we love C-class, because
they weren't all the worst. One of them is still my Facebook friend, but most of them were.
But you end up having the most problems, is my bottom line point about that, because you've got garbage disposals. You've got all sorts of things that you don't have in C-class properties, moving parts and bells and whistles.
Right.
So check that out. All right, so
the storm's coming, and we're going to leave you. You can probably see the trees behind us are starting to turn up. So rather than podcast in the rain, we're going to say goodbye.
Yeah.
So again, if you're watching this on the live YouTube stream, thank you very much. If you're listening to this as a podcast, you need to know that we have a YouTube show too. So check that out.
Yeah. Go to the Morris Invest YouTube channel. And if you're ready to take action and pick up your first rental property, our properties are in the $40,000 to $50,000 range. That's pretty much the price tag, depending on the area. Our team will take great care of you. So jump on the phone with us. Go to morrisinvest.com. Just click on the schedule a consultation button and jump on the phone for 30 minutes with our team. And we'll get to know your freedom number, find out what goals you have financially, and we'll try to help you get there. So we hope you found today's video informative. There's a lot of moving parts when it comes to property management. So thanks so much, everyone. Now go out there, take action, and become a real estate investor. Just don't manage properties yourself. See you, everyone.